As part of my training to become a minister, I spent a summer doing clinical pastoral education, or CPE, at St. Elizabeth's Medical Center in Boston. Now, CPE is part theological reflection and group learning with other seminary students, and part hands-on chaplaincy experience in the field. Right away, I was pretty comfortable with the classroom work and the small group discussion parts of the experience, but I was terrified of the actually visiting people part. What on earth would I say? What could I possibly do to make anyone feel better? After all, I could no more cure diseases or mend broken bones back then than I can now. So I was nervous. I felt a little unqualified to be visiting patients. But CPE doesn't ease you into chaplaincy. It is a full immersion experience. So within the first week, I was on the floor visiting patients. Lucky for me, or so I thought, St. Elizabeth's is a Catholic hospital in a predominantly Catholic neighborhood. So we were informed that the priests from the local parish were always on call if we needed them. If someone was actively dying and the priest needed to deliver last rites, they were just a phone call away. If someone wanted communion, Catholic communion that is, something I was obviously not authorized to do, we could call a priest. I cannot tell you how relieved I was to know that I had what I thought was a backup. And I carried that phone number to the local parish around with me to every room, just in case. One of the floors I was assigned to that summer was the oncology floor, the wing of the hospital where people receive chemotherapy treatment. Every day, I quietly made my way onto the floor and started cautiously visiting patients, making my rounds. Some people were not interested in spiritual care and waved me away. Some people were in too much pain or exhaustion to be bothered, and I left them alone. And some people were happy to see me, and we would chat and maybe even pray a little bit together. The weeks went by, and as I formed relationships with the patients and the nurses, I slowly got more and more comfortable with my role as a chaplain. But I still carried that Catholic parish phone number with me everywhere I went, just in case. Then one day I knocked on the door of a new patient whom I'd never seen before. "Come in," he said, and I opened the door. "Hello," I said, "my name is Rebecca. I'm one of the chaplains here at..." Full stop. Sitting up calmly in his seat was a man twice my age wearing a black suit and a priest's collar. Oh, jeez. Time to panic. What about my backup plan? The priest I had always imagined was in my back pocket, that phone number I had been carrying around just in case. He was now my patient. And he obviously knows more about this than I do, I thought. He has way more experience than I do. He has more authority than I do. And what the heck am I even doing here? And where's the way out? I couldn't help but think I had nothing to offer this man. No cure, no answers, no prayers that he hadn't already prayed. But I went in and I sat down. And bless his heart, he started asking me about my schooling, my theology, my plans for my ministry. I started to relax. As I relaxed, I asked him about his life, his job, his hopes, his fears. In other words, we talked like normal people. After about half an hour, we concluded the session, and I know the priest wasn't cured when I left. But perhaps both of us experienced some small measure of healing that day. At a time when I felt unsure of myself, this experience helped me realize that I don't have to be fully formed or completely and perfectly prepared or able to perform miracles to offer healing and comfort to another human being. It taught me the difference between cure and care, and I learned that my job is to care. It's pretty easy to understand cure in our culture. We live in a world that's focused on problem solving, and thank goodness, because with the miracles of modern medicine, we now have penicillin, cures for smallpox and malaria, advanced treatments for cancer and diabetes, which allow people to live long, full lives. And we even now have a new cure for hepatitis C. For all of this, I am enormously grateful. I rejoice and celebrate with everyone I know and love and all those that I don't know around the world whose lives have been saved and enhanced by modern medicine. But this truth that some things can, in fact, be completely cured, and our focus on finding the cure above all else was exactly what had gotten me worked up in CPE. Because I thought, I can't cure people. I am not a scientist or a doctor. And therefore, I had nothing to offer. Cures are indeed remarkable, and I wish them for all that ails us and pains us. But as we heard in the poem earlier by Fred Recklow, cure is not all that there is. Cure does not always equal healing. In fact, cure may occur without healing. The disease may be gone, but a person may still suffer. Because a cure is a specific act that acts upon someone, isolates, reduces, fixes, and manages the human experience. It is external to the human being and done to them. The body may be fixed, but the mind and the spirit may still need attention. And sometimes, as we all know, there is no cure. Some people live with chronic illness and pain that will never be cured. Some people daily manage diseases that seem to take over every aspect of their lives. And all of us live with the one and only truth that we know for sure. The one condition that has absolutely no cure, mortality. As Reverend Wayne Arneson once said, medicine may win a lot of battles, but it will always lose the war. Each of us will eventually experience something for which there is no cure. It is inevitable. And here is the great mystery. When cure is elusive, healing is still possible, because they're not the same thing. Just because we're all mortal and being alive is an incurable condition doesn't mean that we can't be healed and whole. Healing and wholeness are possible for everyone at every moment, no matter what kind of body you have or what your body is experiencing. Because healing is a process of the soul that fosters wellness and purpose. It's always possible because healing is an outcome of love and caring. I don't know what happened to that priest those many years ago. I never saw him again. But I do know that for just a moment, I had the opportunity to care with him, even if it was brief. No magic words were stated, no medicine administered, or problem solved, but we connected. We entered the healing space of spiritual care. He allowed me to care about him, knowing full well that I couldn't cure him. And somehow, it was enough. Thomas More wrote a well-known book about care that many of you may have heard of, be familiar with, called Care of the Soul. In it, he talks about healing as modest care, not miraculous cure. He writes, "Care of the soul is not primarily a method of problem solving. Its goal is not to make life problem-free, but to give ordinary life the depth and value that comes with soulfulness. In care of the soul, we ourselves have both the task and the pleasure of organizing and shaping our lives for the good of the soul." For the good of the soul. This is the work of spiritual care, caring, and recognizing and allowing ourselves to be whole. Mind, body, and spirit, just as we are. Broken parts, well-worn parts, unique conditions, diseases, and all, we are whole. Perhaps the hardest part of being human is not the false fight that we have to have the perfect body in some perfect condition, but accepting the body that we do have and surrendering to the things that are simply beyond our control. One of the things that struck me most in Care of the Soul was the way in which Thomas More talked about the poetry of illness and learning to listen to the body the way that we listen to poetry, by paying attention to what is said and what is unsaid, noticing the visible and the invisible, going deep and allowing it to carry us into wonder about the human experience. A part of this human experience, he notes, is that it is based on woundedness. To be human is to be mortal. To be human is to be wounded, not perfect. To illustrate this point, Moore turns to the fifth book of Homer's Iliad, set, of course, during the Trojan War in ancient Greece, this ancient text. And he reminds us that in the midst of raging battle, even the gods are hurt. Aphrodite is struck in the hand. Hera's breast is hit with a three-barbed arrow. And Hades, too, gets an arrow. This book is sometimes called the Song of the Wounded Gods. What does it mean when a god is wounded? I think it means something important about the human condition and the nature of suffering. If the gods suffer and are not perfect, yet still gods, maybe we humans also have permission to be wounded and imperfect, yet still fully human. Maybe the gods suffer with us, have their hearts broken open with us, and weep with us when things break or hurt or fail. Maybe the gods can't cure us, but they are with us, relate to us, and care about us through our experiences, encouraging us to heal. To heal as a process of caring, self-love, and that deep soul work that has endless rewards. Beloveds, you are whole just as you are. Even when you're sick or injured, nothing can take your wholeness away. Your body is beautiful and good and holy just the way it is. Your soul is too, and it too needs care. So please remember, I know it's hard, but when cures are not possible, healing is. Healing is always possible. For healing is just another word for love, and we all know that love is always possible. So on your journey towards fuller wholeness of mind, body, and spirit, may you be cared for and caring. May you be loved and loving. May you be blessed and a blessing. May this be so. Amen, and blessed be.